Welcome to the South Elkhorn Christian Church Sermon Podcast. We hope you enjoy the weekly messages. For bulletin material, reflection guides, and other resources, visit southelkhorncc.org.
Two-a-days. Two-a-days. I had never heard of two-a-days. At least not until I was entering high school. I was leaving middle school, I was beginning high school, and I wanted to play high school football. Two-a-days, I learned. Two-a-days were how the camp, football camp began, practice began in the heat and humidity of July in Kentucky. Two-a-days were designed to have long extended practices, but to avoid, purportedly, the heat and humidity of the day, a practice in the morning and a practice in the evening. Lots and lots of practice. I was excited to go. I was excited to be a part of this football team. I was excited to learn my position and go through the exercises and the motions and the strength and everything that was involved in playing football. And then I came home that night, and my mom had never seen anything like it. I wasn't hungry. I was so tired. I didn't even want to eat dinner. My mom said, I had made you steak. My mom never made steak. And I said, put it away. I need water. So much water. There's not enough water in Lake Michigan for all the water I wanted to drink. And I said, I think I'm going to bed early. And my mom said, what has happened? And how can I get more of this? I woke up that next morning, and I limped my way into the living room with a wince and a scowl on my face. And my mom says, oh, you are hurt. Where does it hurt? And I said, I think everywhere. Where does it hurt? Where does it hurt? That's the question that we are going to be exploring today. Perhaps everywhere, likely somewhere specific. Where does it hurt? An important question, one that might have been asked to you, one you might have asked before, and yet one that I think is so incredibly important to being people of faith, to being people who are willing to have courageous conversation with one another and with our world. Where does it hurt? The life and ministry of Jesus, as Pastor Holly pointed out in the story that she shared with us during the children's moment, as we're about to read in more detail in Mark's gospel, the life and ministry of Jesus involves going into, addressing, confronting the suffering and pain of the world. Jesus was a healer. And the church that follows in his name is and can be, and perhaps should be, most faithfully when we are about healing, seeking healing. What that healing looks like, what that healing means, well, that's an important reality to wrestle with. And yet, at the core of what it means to be people of faith is pursuing the healing of the world, the healing of our souls, of our minds and bodies and spirits, the healing and well-being of one another. Healing is at the heart of the ministry of Jesus and is at the heart of what the church can and should be all about. And so if we're going to enter into courageous conversation with one another, we're going to have to get real, get comfortable, get better equipped to handle the suffering and pain that exists everywhere and among us and within us. So with that, let's turn to a story of Jesus, turn to a double story of Jesus, what the Bible commentators call an intercalation, which simply means a sandwich story. There's a story that begins, another story in the middle, and a story that concludes, and we can learn something from how these stories intersect with each other. Jesus, the healer. Mark chapter 5, reading verses 21 through 43. When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, Jesus has been going back and forth across the Sea of Galilee. He's been healing and feeding back and forth. When he had crossed again to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was by the sea. Then one of the leaders of the synagogue, named Jairus, came, and when he saw him, fell at his feet and begged him repeatedly, "My little daughter is at the point of death. come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live, so that she may be healed and thrive. So he went with him. Little phrase, packed with so much. So he went with him. And a large crowd followed him and pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all that she had. She had gone broke searching for a remedy for her sickness, and she was no better and actually rather grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and simply touched his cloak, for she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you. How could you say, 'Who touched me?' I mean, they're kind of all touching you, Jesus." He looked all around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, some people came from the leader's house to say, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the leader of the synagogue, "Don't fear, believe." Or actually using the same word that Jesus had just said to the woman who had been healed, just trust, just faith. He allowed no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the house of the leader of the synagogue, he saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. When he had entered, he said to them, "Why do you make a commotion and weep? The child's not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. Then he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, rise, get up." And immediately the girl got up and began to walk about. She was 12 years of age. At this, they were overcome with amazement, and he strictly ordered them that no one should know this, and told them to give her something to eat. The word of God for the people of God. When I was on sabbatical in 2022, I had the opportunity to visit the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. Perhaps some of you have been there. Perhaps some of you know of one of the paintings that I was very eager and excited to see. It was the Starry Night painting by Vincent van Gogh that I have here. I took a picture while I was there. It looks pretty big there. Not quite so big in real life. And yet still stunning and beautiful. The colors, the vibrancy of this painting and so many paintings by Vincent van Gogh just captured me. In fact, when I was not really interested in art at all in high school, I went to an art class and was shown a painting of Vincent van Gogh. I think it was the Wheatfield and Cypress, and I was just entranced, amazed by the brushstrokes and the colors. Something drew me in. Only later, when I would come to appreciate art a little more, would I even fall more in love with the work of Vincent van Gogh. So I was super excited to get to see this painting. What I didn't know a whole lot about was the story of Vincent van Gogh. Like many artists, a troubled soul. What I didn't know was that when he painted Starry Night, he did so from an institution that he had committed himself to because he was struggling with a bout, perhaps, of depression. There, during that year, he painted this beautiful photo, this beautiful painting. We don't always know the pain and suffering that people carry. We don't always know the pain and suffering that are in someone's story, figures of history, or even the people around us. Even the people that we call brother or sister, mom, dad, child, cousin, teacher, boss, peer, friend. One of the things that I think this story teaches us, there are many things this story can teach us. One of the things I think this story teaches us is that all of us carry some kind of suffering. all of us carry some kind of suffering. Fear, anxiety, loss, grief, medical illnesses and conditions. Pain and suffering are part of what it is to live at all. We may feel that differently at different moments in our life. We may feel that more intensely in different seasons of our life. And yet all of us, if we're honest, carry some kind of pain and suffering. Which is why I think the ministry of Jesus is so incredibly beautiful, because what we see time and time and time again is that Jesus pays attention to pain and suffering. Now, I want to be clear this morning. That what we don't learn from this, what we shouldn't take away from this story, is if we just have enough faith, then whatever medical condition that we're suffering from will just magically evaporate. And that if you do suffer from a medical condition, if you do suffer from a physical illness, that if you haven't been healed of it, well, sorry, you just don't have enough faith. Unfortunately, teachings like that have been understood in religious circles and churches. And I want to be clear this morning. These are not stories for us to think that if we just pray the right way, if we just furrow our brow enough and have enough faith, that whatever ailment, affliction, or suffering we are undergoing will just magically dissipate and dissolve. That is not what we need to take away from this story. Even so, I do think prayer is powerful and matters. Even so, I think it matters that we pursue healing in all the ways that God has gifted us to heal, from doctors, science, mental health specialists, therapists, counselors, community friends, food. Anyone ever been healed by a casserole? I think I've been close. I do think that what these stories invite us to see is that Jesus was about healing. And I love this phrase, might be made well and live. That Jesus is about healing, not only for survival, but for thriving, for this life and life abundantly, that Jesus wants people to experience the wholeness and fullness of life. Now, there's something about that is unlocked and unleashed when we pursue healing. If everyone is suffering in some measure, in some way, then perhaps all of us can pursue healing. Where does it hurt? Where does it hurt? One of the things I think Jesus invites us to see and helps us to understand is that part of the job of the church, to follow like the crowd in the way of Jesus when Jesus is confronted by someone who's begging for him to enact healing on his daughter Jairus, that the crowd follows Jesus, and we're invited to follow Jesus into the suffering of the world, into the grief, the anguish, the pain of the world. That's where Jesus is going, and that's where the church is called to go to. As church, we have to get used to pain and suffering. We have to learn how to open our hearts to the pain and suffering that exists all around us, to the brokenness and woundedness of a world that is undergoing so much loss, division, hate, misunderstanding, prejudice, destructive tendencies and injustice. Our heart must be open, because the heart of Jesus was open. When confronted with the suffering of the world, Jesus went. He went. And so too must the church. And yet as he went, suffering was not just ahead of him, it was all around him. The crowd that was there, they were suffering too. The people who assemble to go on the way of Jesus into the suffering of the world, we too, we here, suffer. We suffer. We suffer in ways that are invisible, like Vincent van Gogh, perhaps from a mental health condition, perhaps from a grief or loss that we carry with us, perhaps from a relationship that has fallen apart, perhaps from disappointment in a dream that hasn't come through. There are all kinds of ways we suffer invisibly and behind the scenes. There is suffering here in this room, everywhere we are. And Jesus makes space. When the woman who had been bleeding reaches out to touch Jesus and is healed, Jesus wants to give her space and attention, as if her healing wasn't complete until she could tell her truth. until she could tell, as the text says, her whole truth, until she could name and bring before Jesus the pain and suffering that she had endured for years and years and years, and claim it, and claim her healing. I love that Jesus makes space and holds space for her to tell her story. And maybe that's what we can learn. Because our job isn't to be Jesus. We're not going to go necessarily and lay hands on people and they'll immediately get up and be healed. We're not going to go and be able to raise the dead, but we can do what Jesus did and make space for people to name their hurt and their suffering, and to do so in a way that is difficult and rare in our world, without judgment, without trying to fix or solve someone else's pain or suffering, but to just receive it. And believing something happens when we are giving people the space to name what it is they're going through. This morning, I want to encourage you, I want to invite you to consider what it might mean for you to hold space, for you to make space and hold space for the people you care about, for your friends and family, for your children, for your parents, for their pain and suffering when they have the courage and boldness to share it with you. Perhaps you're like me, and you're a fixer. And so when someone says they've got a problem, you go into fix-it mode. Okay, here's what we're going to do. I love that Jesus just holds space and honors the agency of the woman who reached out to him. I love that he says, your faith, your tenacity, your advocacy for yourself has made you well. He doesn't try to fix it for her. He names the mystery of God at work through her own agency and seeking her own healing, and lifts it up and empowers and honors her. What would it mean for us? Not to think that we can immediately solve everyone's problem and so either run away from it or try to just fix it for them, but instead just to make space to honor the story of pain and suffering that people might want to bring before us. It takes great strength. It takes great faith, perhaps, to believe that we can just dwell next to someone else in their pain and suffering, and that will be enough. It takes great faith and trust in God to join us in that and trust that we're not in control. And yet I think something beautiful, maybe even healing, happens when we make and hold space for people to name and claim their pain and their suffering. And importantly, not dismiss it or diminish it. So I'm going to practice that this morning. I'm going to practice that this morning because there's actually something about this story that is, and the way that Christians have interpreted it throughout the generations, that has caused some pain and suffering. One of the ways that pastors and theologians and folks who have interpreted this story have made sense of it has often elevated this idea of the shame of the woman who is bleeding. That because she was undergoing this affliction and condition, that she was ritually impure and therefore must have been shamed and socially isolated and pushed away and pushed back. And one of the things that Jesus does is he overturns all these awful, terrible religious rules that isolated and ostracized her. And not only is she healed, but she's returned to community. The problem with that interpretation is it doesn't do justice to the text because she's in the midst of the crowd. And it misunderstands the nature of ritual impurity. And what it kind of does, even if we don't mean it to, is it basically makes Jesus look good at the expense of Judaism. As one New Testament professor said, we don't need Judaism to look bad for Jesus to look good. And yet sometimes that's how our interpretations work. And some Jewish scholars and some Jewish leaders have said, hey, can we not just bash Judaism at every turn when we're talking about the ministry and life and meaning of Jesus? And so I think it's important to honor and hold that pain and acknowledge the ways that the Christian tradition has at times been anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish. And I really appreciate hearing that for Jesus to be everything that Jesus is doesn't come at the expense of anyone or anything. Indeed, embracing the very Jewishness of Jesus may help us relate to and connect to him more sincerely and truthfully and fully. Jesus was a Jew. Jesus was Jewish. Jesus wanted to lift up the God experienced and discovered in the Hebrew Scriptures, in what we call the Old Testament. Jesus wanted to bring before the people who were there the healing that had always been there in the presence of God, and to see it in a new and fresh way through his ministry, through his life, and eventually through his death and resurrection. We don't need to belittle or demean Judaism to see the fullness and beauty of all that Jesus is and does and means. I think instead of seeing this woman as some shame-ridden victim, I think it's beautiful to see her as Jesus does, as an advocate for her own healing, as someone willing to push through the crowd and touch him, as someone who so fiercely trusted that she needed help and help from others, that she was willing to do whatever it took to make that happen, that she wasn't going to stop when all of her resources dissipated, that she wasn't going to stop, even though it had been years and years and years, that she was going to seek her own healing and well-being. And Jesus honors and embraces that. Where does it hurt? Where does it hurt? Asking that question can invite us into some pretty deep and difficult places. Places that might make us uncomfortable. And yet I think it's the opportunity before the church to learn how to hold and hold dear the pain and suffering of others without judgment, without trying to solve and fix it, trusting that God can show up in those moments and that healing can begin and continue and come to fruition. Stories like this are hard, especially if you've ever lost someone dear to you and you've wanted only to hold them again, to know them alive next to you again. These stories can bring up a lot of difficult and hard emotions, a lot of grief and loss, a lot of pain. And I think it's important to ask ourselves, where does it hurt? Where does it hurt? Because I'm not sure we can hold the pain and suffering of others if we haven't learned to hold our own pain and our own suffering. If we haven't learned to slow down long enough to ask ourselves, where does it hurt? To get past that first experience where we just want to say, everywhere! And learn that there are some specific places where we hold our pain in our bodies, in our hearts, in our minds. I've heard it said that hurt people hurt people. I find that to be true about myself. I've experienced that in the world as pretty true. There's a lot of hurt people. We're all, in some ways, hurt people. But I also love this, that not only perhaps hurt people, but I think healing people help others heal. And so I think I kind of want to flip this question on its head, not just where do you hurt, where do we hurt, where does our world hurt? How are you healing? What does your healing story look like? Not that we're all done with our healing. Not that healing isn't a lifelong process, but I wonder what it would mean for a church, for people, to know not only how to ask the question, where does it hurt, but how to ask and engage the question, how am I, how are we healing? What's your healing story? And to make space for that as well. Because the gospel writers knew the power of a healing story. The power of a healing story that they wanted to capture and that they wanted to hand on to the next generations, to know that God shows up in the midst of people who are willing to seek healing, are willing to be real and hold space for pain and suffering, that God shows up in powerful and beautiful ways, has and is and will. Well, Alexa Smith, who's in the media booth, she wrecked my sermon this morning. Thanks, Alexa. I wanted her to put this picture of Starry Night up there, and she said, "Oh, it's." I was like, "Do you know the story of Starry Night?" And she was like, "Well, kind of, sorta." And you know the Don McLean song. And I was like, "What? Wait, what song?" She's like, but my high school teacher said something about the Don McLean song. You know, the one who wrote American Pie? He also wrote this song. And I was like, wait, what? Listen, I got to preach in like 15 minutes. So I'm getting my phone. You might have seen me. I'm like, what? What? Don McLean wrote a song, the details of which I'm still learning, as if to Vincent van Gogh, acknowledging that behind the brushstrokes that he painted so vividly and so beautifully, there was pain and suffering that had gone unacknowledged. And as if inviting all of us to pay better attention to each other and to ourselves, says, maybe we can see now what you were trying to tell us then, Vincent. In a time when mental health disorders weren't named or acknowledged or understood, maybe we can see better now what you were trying to tell us then. And maybe we can still see, maybe we can still discover, maybe we can still embrace that even when people suffer, they can do beautiful, amazing things. The most vivid colors, the most honest strokes. Maybe when we make space for our own suffering and our own pain and the suffering and pain of others, when we pursue our healing and aren't stuck in our hurt, we can discover the power of this question, the power of conversation, and the power of Christ to show up again and again and again and make something new. Indeed, maybe even make us new.
Thanks for listening to the message this week. Visit southelkhorncc.org, where you can download reflection and discussion guides to dig deeper into the weekly scripture and message.